This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 at the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. Today, I'm joined in the studio by the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruse. Say hello.
Hello.
And of course, Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
I'm surprised you still remember me and my name.
Of course, I am Richard Bradbury. We'll be with you for the next few minutes. We are giving you some news. We are giving you some car launches, both local and global. And we don't have a car review for you, but what we do have is stuff about the Vehicle of the Year, the 2019 winners listing.
Yeah, yes. Daniel had that about a week ago, didn't he?
Yes.
And what happened?
Both of you didn't join.
But, so you couldn't do it?
We did it. But you guys didn't come along.
I'm sorry, man.
That was a free dinner.
It's free, was it?
Yeah.
Was it good?
Indian food.
Oh, you know how I like Indian food.
Exactly.
Indian's very tasty. Right, let's start off with the news then, of course. It is the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruse.
Yeah, so we've got quite a lot of news. You know, we missed last week's show because it was a holiday. Hooray.
Yay.
But we've got quite a bit to catch up. So I'm going to kick it off with a new public transport fund.
We do?
Yep. So the Putrajaya launched 500 million ringgit fund managed by Bank Pembangunan Malaysia earlier this month. And it's apparently supposed to encourage more public transportation use by financing the system's improvements. So the way that they're trying to encourage people or businesses to help and encourage public transportation is that it can be used to purchase vehicles like taxis and buses and all that stuff. And it can be purchased by operators, suppliers, manufacturers, assemblers of public transport vehicles. Basically anybody to do with public transportation, really.
So anybody who wants to drive a bus or a taxi or whatever, it's easier for them.
Yep. Or anybody who wants to start a business relating to the public transport system. I really don't know much about the ins and outs of this thing, but I mean, it sounds quite positive, I think. What do you think,
Danielle?
I think it's just
oh, here we go. I think this is just a happy fella.
I think this is just the start of something that's going to go way wrong in so many directions because, you know, you can't just give out money like this to, you know, anybody who wants to. You know, you can't just say anybody who wants to. You have to think about it. Are you qualified to do it? Do you have the right infrastructure? Are you going to actually get proper drivers to do this? You know, I mean, for instance, the three of us, I agree. Three of us could start a ride-hailing company. You know, we just get our friends to become ride-hailers and get some old cars and say, okay, this is our business model. Mm. We can't afford new cars, so we'll get old cars. Mm. You have to think about all this. You know?
I mean, I'm guessing they've probably got some of those things in place.
There must be a lot of guidelines, yes.
But one thing that kind of bothers me always about public transportation is that kind of last mile problem, right?
Yeah.
So it's okay having your buses, but when you've dropped somebody off and they've got to walk, right, you know, another mile. They don't even have public transportation where I live. And I live in Bangsar.
No, but you see, Bangsar people are rich.
But that's not the point.
They got expat salaries.
Not all of them. It's centrally located.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I mean, yeah. Okay, they have the MRT and they have the LRT.
And they got the number 5 bus.
Do they?
Yes.
You know more than I do.
Because I used to live in Bangsar.
Uh-huh.
When the expats came in, I moved out.
Right. Now the Indians are moving back in.
Exactly. Indian expats.
Onwards to more serious news that we actually know what to talk
tinted
about.
Tinted windows.
Tinted windows, yes, yes.
Hot topic. Because we need tinted windows. It's hot. Yeah.
So the new rules, apparently, with the new tinted windows,
correct,
is that the front side of the car is still about the same, but the rear, you can have it as dark as you want, right?
Yes, so basically this is exactly, I mean, from what I know, this is exactly what Japan has been doing.
Yeah.
For the longest time. That's why you see all these imported cars from Japan, the grey cars, they all come with dark rear windows and the front windows are clear. Because why? You must see the driver and the front passenger. The rear, really no matter. So, you know, when these cars come in, the windows get removed, clear glass gets installed to get the Pushpa.com approvals, then the dark windows get reinstalled back. But all this will stop now, and this new ruling, I think, is the right way forward.
I think so too. I mean, this regulation is about the same as UK and US as well, isn't it?
Does this apply to government cars as well?
Well, it's a government ruling. I think the government cars should follow.
Because they all seem to be tinted, like super tinted.
Yeah.
Yes, but you know, again, they have special requirements for people who want extremely dark tinting, whether it's health reasons or it's security reasons.
Yeah.
So I think for government, it's security reasons. For a lot of us, you know, like some people say, oh, I've got, you know, a skin issue, it's cancerous and whatever else, they will get a doctor's letter and get it done, which has been enforced for the longest time already. But a lot of people abuse the system because they're going to see a skin specialist. They get a nice letter done. Yeah. Then they go to the JPJ, and the JPJ says, okay, it comes from a reliable doctor. And get the ductin done. But, you know, anyway, this is a move in the right direction.
It's basically like getting an MC.
Exactly. Not that easy, but it's almost there. Yeah. It's almost there.
I mean, I should also mention that if you are a regular civilian, the JPJ says you can actually apply to have front dark tinted windows.
Right.
But you have to pay $50 to get the application done. And you must have no criminal records or summons. But it's no guarantee. And if you do get approved, then you have to pay an extra 5,000 ringgit on top of that.
So even though they brought rules out.
Yeah, yeah.
There's still ways of getting around these rules.
Of course. But you have to pay 5,050 ringgit.
For those that really, really, really want tinted windows, they're going to pay that 5,000 ringgit.
They will pay.
Right?
They will
pay. Of course they will. Yeah.
And also the fact that I think a lot of people have been complaining about tinted windows, and especially why we can't have black rear tinted windows, because we have so many stories of smash and grabs, right? Where handbags and things just get stolen from the back. You're sitting in traffic, and then a motorcyclist just comes up, smashes his arm in the window, and steals your stuff. And I think this tinting window will prevent that to some extent. Maybe. I don't think so.
Because you know why? If I'm going to have dark windows, I'm going to attract the thieves. Whether he finds anything or not, he's going to be attracted to it. So I'd rather have clear windows, but I want UV resistant tint. Because why? He can use and try and hit the glass on anything else. I keep everything in the boot.
Okay, move on then. E-racing.
E-racing. Sim racing, as it's also known. Apparently, Malaysia will host the first round of the E-racing Grand Prix of Southeast Asia in June. Alex Jung and his team, Axel Motorsport, who are very successful in China, they brought this whole E-racing Grand Prix thing to Southeast Asia. And it will go to all Southeast Asian countries, in Myanmar, Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia, all of them. And racers will get to drive on the PlayStation, and they haven't actually revealed what sort of game it is, but I look at the photo and I'm thinking it's Gran Turismo Sport, definitely.
Right.
And the top 40 qualify to participate in this little competition will get training from professional racing drivers to become real-life racing drivers.
Ooh.
And it's actually quite a good thing, because Gran Turismo, the game company that we all love to play with back in those days, PlayStation 1, right? They have become more of a racing team and a racing club rather than just a game development company.
Yeah. And a lot of professional racers actually started here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
They started with this. So it's okay.
They've been running this thing called GT Academy since 2008.
Correct.
So it's about 11 years. And they've had so many racing drivers, young people my age, 24 to 30 or 35, something
Thanks
like that.
Thanks for rubbing it in, yeah.
I got to correct you. Most of the young people are younger than you.
Really?
This is true, yeah. You're okay, old
they're,
now.
They're teenagers, mostly they're, teenagers.
Okay, so they're younger than me. But so, the fact is that They just play their games their whole life, and then they enter this competition, and then they receive professional training from possibly the best trainers and drivers in the world, and then they compete in things like Super GT, FIA GT, and the Le Mans and all that. And I think it's brilliant.
Yes.
I think especially with the KBS, the Kementerian Belia Dansukan in Malaysia, the sports ministry, they've been promoting a lot of esports, and I've always felt like not much attention was being paid to racing simulation, because it's a really, really huge thing and a really huge industry. So yeah, it's really positive. Final piece of news story, Tesla has some warnings for us for the future.
Dun, dun, dun.
But it doesn't apply. No Tesla in Malaysia.
No Tesla. Well, this isn't specifically about Tesla's problems, but
take that and put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I'm quiet.
So about a couple of years ago, Elon Musk, the pioneer of semi-autonomous driving and Tesla's autopilot, he said that AI is more dangerous than nuclear weapons. Are you guys in agreement with that?
Continue.
He has an opinion.
He also says that AI is likely to destroy humans.
Again, let him have his opinion.
Yeah. He says all of this because he has a fear that a handful of major companies will control AI systems with extreme levels of power. And that kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, he finally says, there's a 5 to 10% chance that AI will be safe for us to use.
Okay.
And that's quite bleak, isn't it?
He's scaring people with this, isn't he?
Didn't he practically invent the autopilot?
he spoke a lot about the autopilot, but I think moreover he's kind of shifting people away from the idea of AI to some other things that he has in development. He still wants people to drive his cars. So by telling people that AI is scary and one thing or another, it means that more people will buy these cars without the AI functions, which can bring his production costs down. But he's also talking about the electrification and battery problems and one thing or another. Before you mention your favorite company name.
I didn't want to say anything.
Right? I have this idea. another one.
Let's hear it.
Capacitors is the future, not batteries.
Okay.
They charge faster, they're cheaper to produce, and they use less of the resources we need
to make batteries.
To make batteries, and they're a lot cheaper.
Are they more efficient?
Yes. Right now, they are. You have to use more of them right now because they can only store a small amount of power. But they're being worked on right now. But they can charge super fast and hold a lot more energy.
I mean, that could actually solve Tesla's other warning for the future, in which they say that the whole electrification of vehicles will actually cause global shortages of copper, nickel, and EV batteries in the future.
And it's funny you should mention that, because Elon Musk has just bought a capacitor company.
Really? Mm.
Would you believe it? Would you Adam and Eve it?
So that's why you brought it up.
There you go.
It's a whole conspiracy theory,
of course,
isn't
it? Is. Yeah.
But, I mean, talking about, like, all these global shortages of key materials and minerals, a lot of car companies have decided to go a different way when they've realized that there could be a shortage of minerals in the future. And they've decided to go towards hydrogen, which I think we all decided to kill off back in 2008 when Tesla released their Model S and showed the world that electric cars can do their thing. But even brands like Hyundai and Audi and Toyota and Honda, even those car manufacturers haven't really dropped the ball on hydrogen. And the upside about hydrogen is that, you know how when we talk about electric cars, we're always talking about infrastructure and having to build a lot of things, charging points and more cables and more electricity and all that stuff.
Yep.
Well, hydrogen, if I'm not mistaken, Daniel, hydrogen uses the same, a very similar engine to the internal combustion engine.
I cannot comment because I'm not really well versed in this, because a few years ago, everyone was talking about hydrogen, and then suddenly it just dropped, and then only Hyundai has been going really solid into it.
Yeah.
Mm. And they've not had commercial success with this. They've done a lot of work in Paris. In fact, there are two hydrogen Hyundais in Malaysia right now.
Nexo or something.
Yes,
like that.
Being tested in Sarawak. And, you know, two people have bought them. Two organizations have bought them, Sarawak Power and the chief minister. But again, the price is ridiculously high. It's not commercial. And, you know, the way things are going, everybody's just moving towards battery power because somebody said, okay, battery's away, everybody goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
3 years from now, they'll say, oh, you know, let's go solar. And then 4 years from now, somebody else will say something else.
I mean, like, using hydrogen cars is obviously, I mean, the cost is astronomical. But
that's only because it's the economy of scale, right?
Yes, I mean, economies of scale.
Yeah.
Exactly. And also the fact that storing hydrogen and actually refining hydrogen into a fuel is extremely dangerous.
Yes.
And even if you get a crack in the tank, that could mean explosions in
exactly.
In
so you got
seconds.
So many issues. They had the same issues with the first electric car.
That's true, and the first few internal combustion engines. Yeah. So
we leave them all to fight among themselves.
But it's,
and
I mean,
work it out.
It's quite an interesting perspective to see in the future. I think the battle between hydrogen and electric vehicles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't forget, solar will just walk in because the sun is not going anywhere.
It's not anytime soon. Yes. We're going to wrap up this segment, ladies and gents. Join us after the break, where we have some local and some global car launches. Of course, you are listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 at the Business Station. This is Cruise Control Car Show here on BFM. I'm in the studio with Ari Farooz, the man with the news, over there.
Hello.
And Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my over here.
Thank you for remembering me.
I just remember you. Anyway.
Local news.
We have some local launches. One, two, three, four, about five of them.
Right.
Yep. First one, Hyundai Santa Fe. We just
Your
saw
favorite.
Prices.
My
favorite. My favorite SUV.
And shocking, it was first announced at 188,000 starting. Now it's 168,888 starting.
10K drop in price.
Well, it's more than just that drop in price. Is the spec has not changed. They worked the magic with their parents in Korea, and they worked the magic with the taxation department, and they got a fantastic price. This gives a scare to people like Mazda and Honda.
Yeah.
You're right, because they are priced very similarly.
And this is a bigger vehicle. And it's a brand new vehicle, and it's got a lot more spec on it.
In fact, I think if you go for a high-spec CX-5, you're more suited to getting a Hyundai Santa Fe.
Exactly.
Right?
Now, the only question now is, can you accept the Hyundai brand? There's still a lot of stigma out there. Even though there's nothing wrong with it, there's still a lot of stigma.
A lot of Malaysians won't be comfortable with that.
Yes.
But headline prices starts from 170,000 ringgit, 168,000 ringgit for the basic 2.4 MPI petrol engine, two-wheel drive executive.
Mm-hmm.
And you go all the way up to 211,000 ringgit for the 2.2 four-wheel drive premium, which I believe is the new peak for the Hyundai Santa Fe.
Yes.
Of course, diesels are a bit more expensive at the moment, correct, but they are better in the long run. Moving on, Audi. They've come with a few sedans.
So once they've done with the Q-Series, now they're coming to the sedans, the A3 and the A5. Both very aggressive pricing, 240,000 for the A3 and 340 for the A5. You know, a lot of people say, oh, what's so aggressive about that? Both are fully imported and high spec.
High spec, really high spec.
Yes, I've seen the cars, I've touched and felt them. I think if you give them a chance, you should actually take it for a test drive. But the problem is, again, people come and say, oh, after sales, they're not all over the country, you know, things like that. But I think Audi has to really make a stronger presence felt here because Volvo is catching up in terms of numbers.
Yeah. And I think 240,000 for the A3 is really, really attractive.
Yes. Yes.
I think a lot of the Bangsar people will be looking forward to that.
Don't expect.
Okay. So you got also the BMW 5 Series.
Yep. More models on top of the 530i and the 530e Sports. Yes. Now you get a 520i Luxury for 330,000 and a 530e M Sport for 10,000 ringgit more. Which begs the question, why does the 530e Sport exist and why does the 520i Luxury, I guess it exists for company car purposes, right?
But it's all so closely priced.
Yeah.
You walk into the showroom, you might say, okay, I'll just pay a little bit more and take the high spec. So either the low spec is not going to be selling at all or just, you know, smidgen here and there, or there is some marketing gimmick going on here which we haven't figured out yet.
I mean, again, on paper, 520i Luxury, 330,000 ringgit, no autonomous stuff, no top-of-the-line equipments like sunroof and all that stuff. 530e M-Sport, you basically get everything.
Correct.
For 10,000 ringgit more. And then you go all the way up to 370,000, you get the 530i, which is basically the same car as the 530e M Sport. So what's going on?
Let them figure it out.
Yep. Moving on to another German, the Mercedes C63S Coupe and Saloon was launched, the facelift versions, 770,000 for the Saloon and 821,000 ringgit. We weren't expecting this launch because Mercedes actually invited us to Sepang last week to see the launch of the GT63S.
Right.
That is a very, 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 very sexy looking car, as agreed by most of our BFM Cruise Control followers on Instagram.
Right.
But it's basically a saloon, bespoke saloon.
It's sexy.
I want to bring something forward because last week we spoke about the CLS, right? And how it's supposed to be a big, sexy Mercedes, luxurious and all that stuff. And then Mercedes AMG comes along with a GT63, which is pretty much the same idea but with a different formula. So the CLS, more luxurious, sleek, swoopy, 60-year-old driving it. GT63S, maybe a 40-year-old. And it's supposed to go up against the Panamera, the new A-Series.
Yeah, but look at that price. 1.8 million.
1.8 million, though.
I'm not.
That's more than a Rolls.
Yeah, you see, you say sexy and you say a lot of people say sexy. Sorry, I'm not taken by the car.
Really?
Because I look at it, $1.8 million. I might as well just go and buy myself a C63S AMG.
Yep.
And
a
GLC 63 AMG, and I'll still have change to pay for the road tax and the fuel for the next 5 years.
But this thing looks like something Batman would drive.
It does.
It only looks like that because it's black with black wheels.
Correct.
I can buy the other two cars in black with black wheels with black windows because I'm allowed to use black windows now, and then I'll get the same look.
Well, I mean, if you can't afford the full fat GT 63 as you can drop down 700,000 ringgit, buy a C63 AMG, and buy a GT43.
Yes.
Okay. Global launches then.
Global launches. Maserati says that they'll never go electric.
Well, they say that now.
But?
They're owned by FCA. FCA has got other electric products coming up.
Because I read a lot of the news and apparently the new FCA boss says that they want to treat it like a luxury brand. So that could mean that it's still going to be part of that raw emotion.
It also means that when everybody else has gone electric, you'll be able to buy a Maserati and you'll be able to drive it on a private field somewhere with nobody else around, and that's the only place you can drive it.
Because with so many cities going, you know,
emissions free.
What are you going to do? You're going to tell the rich guy, sorry, you can't drive a Maserati
here. You're going to have raw emotion driving around the circle.
All you have to do is go up to people and go, hey, it's a Maserati. Let me go.
Yeah, but you see, like a Ferrari is going electric, and Ferrari and Maserati are siblings, so they'll definitely go electric sooner.
Another
later.
Curious piece of news from Italy. I guess. Okay. But from Germany, Porsche apparently want to make a Panamera Coupe.
Yes.
Which to me sounds like a 911, but Porsche says no.
Exactly. It's just like
what is going on in
like
this world?
It's just like the Cayenne Coupe.
Yeah.
It's not really a coupe, it's four doors.
The Panamera was supposed to be a four-door version of the
911. Exactly. The word
right?
Panamera actually meant something that's four-door and a car. So now when you got a coupe, it doesn't make sense. Just like the Cayenne Coupe, they call it a coupe, but it's four doors. a coupe should be two doors.
This is too confusing to me.
Exactly. So what do you do? When you can't figure out what you're going to call your car, just whack a name.
Coupe.
Crossover, SUV, sports crossover, coupe sports back.
Sport Turismo.
Yes.
And finally, towards more relatable news, Hyundai released a pretty good looking facelift of the Ioniq. Again, new designs for each model on the front end for the hybrid, the plug-in hybrid model, as well as the electric vehicle model. You get a new infotainment system, a really nice mood lighting, a new motor, and a new battery that gets you about 300 kilometers in range.
Good.
Which is a very, very positive from Hyundai. Why can't we all just buy Hyundai and stop buying Hyundai?
Why can't it be the next national car?
Speaking of the next national car, Geely, Proton's owners, have released, you know, remember the new crossover thing, right? Yeah. Apparently there's a plug-in hybrid version now. It will be really exciting to bring here.
But like I said so many times on this show exclusively, that will be the next national car program. Maybe or not, we don't know. Because I know Nissan is talking to the government.
Yeah.
We know Volkswagen is talking to the government about electric car program. Other players are also coming to the market. But end of the day, who will give the best deal to the government of Malaysia without costing us a lot of money? That is the question.
Cheng, cheng, cheng. We've got to stop right there, folks, because we have to get to our final segment of the show. Because you two have been chit-chatting for so long, we've cut down our time a little bit. You've probably got about 7 minutes.
That's all right.
So, but I'm sure you can cherry-pick what you want to talk about, right? We will be talking in this segment, of course, about DSF.my's
yes.
Vehicle of the Year.
Yes, we've been doing this for 8 years,
okay,
and Allianz Insurance has always been our partner. The reason why we do this, we want to pick the best cars from each segment. Every year, we have to modify some of the segments because of why? Too many vehicles, like we earlier spoke about, crossover, MPV, SUV, they're all mixing about. So this year, I'm going to mention some of the big winners, some of the important winners. Number one, Vehicle Design of the Year. Now, I gave this with my judges to the Proton X7.
I was actually quite surprised by that.
Yes, why the Proton X? Think about it. Every time you see one on the road, it actually looks good.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Malaysians have actually pointed out and told me, oh, it looks a little bit like a Range Rover. Oh, it looks a little bit like the Mercedes. The design cues of so many European cars, but no one ever says, hey, it looks like a China-made car.
Even Chev One's got one, and he doesn't drive.
Exactly, you know? So, Design of the Year, I gave it the Proton X70. Let there be people debating me on this. I will continue to debate them.
I think also, actually, the interior of the X70 is actually quite pretty.
It's actually very European.
Yeah.
So the next one was Pickup Truck of the Year. Now, this one was a tough competition.
Oh, yes. We were going backwards and forwards about this for a while.
We were debating. We were hammering each other. And then, you know, finally we said we have to give it to something lethal. So we gave it to the Ford Ranger Raptor.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
199,000 might sound a lot for a pickup truck. But looking at the order bank, it seems that enough Malaysians who have a normal pickup truck are willing to migrate up and pay that price. Be warned, and you heard it here first on BFM, the super trucks are coming to Malaysia from all the brands. If Ford can do this with the Raptor, I'm sure Nissan will do it with the Navara, Toyota will do it with the Hilux, and of course Mitsubishi will come back with the Triton, something to look forward to. Next was Hot Hatch. Now, Hot Hatch. So many in the market. So many exciting cars. But only one stood out. Manual, power, awesome looks.
And white. Yeah.
You're talking about Richard?
Hey.
The Honda Civic Type R.
I think no other hot hatch has shaken this segment.
Exactly. I mean, there are a lot of good hot hatches. I mean, the Golf GTI was there. The new Megane came in.
But,
you know, the Mercedes. But the Type R is just in its own class.
Yeah, it's a good-looking thing.
Yes. Now, the next one we're going to talk about is Executive Sedan of the Year. Now, Executive Sedan, this is something which, you know, relates to the common man, the SME owner.
Yes.
The guy with the family.
It's an everyday man's car.
And you want something that, you know, if you can't afford a German or you can't afford an expensive French car, what do? You have to go Japanese or Korean. And the Japanese delivered Toyota Camry.
Unbeatable, I think.
Yes, unbeatable. Actually really looks good. Despite it having that mundane image for years, but it looks good. Okay, then we had compact crossover. And then, you know, again, people debated me on this because the company selling this car says it's an MPV because it's a 7-seater. But we call it a crossover because why? It's not a van. I think MPV should be something van-like. This is not a van. Number two, it's a 2-wheel drive. It's not a 4-wheel drive. So we gave it to the Perdua Arus. And you know, at 70,000 ringgit, how...
Value for money, I guess.
Basic Malaysians love this. Then we had compact sedan. Now, compact sedan, again, something Richard is going to yawn about because he's an expat. You know, he's not going to buy something like this. It's below 90,000. It's something for the common man. It's something for the common woman. It's something for people to maybe use for ride hailing. But it's something that has to be reliable, dependable, easy to maintain, and good resale value. And every year, we find a Japanese car or a Korean car winning this. This year, again, it was a Japanese car, Toyota Vios.
Was there any cars closer to the Vios?
There were cars closer, but the problem is the Vios came at such an attractive price. The previous models didn't really attract my attention, but this one, all of us, when we sat down and looked at it, it actually looks pretty good. So the next one was luxury crossover of the year. Now, luxury crossover, again, you know, when you add the word luxury, it can go from 150,000 to 1.5 million because luxury has got no boundaries. But the thing is, it's easy to give it to something like a Rolls Royce. But it doesn't make sense because how many people can drive a Rolls Royce? So we had to look something which generally Malaysians with our low income, bad exchange value and high car prices, what you say is a luxury crossover of the year. And again, crossover has to be something not so big. Doesn't have to be four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
So we gave it to the new Volvo XC40, which a lot of people appreciated. Then we had luxury sedan of the year. This one had a lot of contenders. Again, this one was a debate among the four judges and everyone had their own pick of a luxury sedan.
Yeah.
So I actually picked this car first and then the other three looked at me and said, oh, it should be this and this and this. I said, okay.
And then you went, what's the name of the website?
No, what's the name of the owner? No. Then I said, very simple. This car is about 500,000. Judge B, your car is about 800,000. Judge C, your car is about 1.2 million. Judge D, your car is about 1.8 million. So yes, the word luxury, again, the boundaries across a huge range of pricing. But I like to look at these awards more for the common man, more for middle class, above middle class. The super rich don't need to look at awards and decide on a car to buy. They buy purely on just brand. It's like someone buying a very expensive handbag. They might not like the look of the handbag. They might not even like the brand. But because it's a very expensive handbag, they buy it. So we gave it to the BMW 6 GT.
I would agree with that because, like you said, luxury, you know, it's...
The balance, yeah.
The balance is everywhere. But right. I think the 6 GT hits a sweet spot with price and what you get for the money, especially with how big the car is.
Exactly.
You because really can't go wrong.
When we were debating this, the Porsche Panamera was in there.
Yeah.
And that's 900,000 ringgit. I mean, it's not short of luxury. But the difference in price,
yep.
You know, and the delivery, you know, that kind of thing. Now, 7-seat SUV of the year. Now, why we had to add the word 7-seat? Because there are so many 5-seater SUVs. But we want to look at a 7-seater SUV because that is something which a lot of people are looking at. And, you know, this one, there was no debate. In a minute, we all agreed on this. The new Peugeot 5008. Then came crossover of the year. You know, there was a lot of debate because there's a lot of crossovers in the market. But the Mazda CX-3, the new facelift, just stood out without a doubt. And even the old one is still an attractive looking car.
Yeah.
You know, but this new one even better. So then we came to the last one. I mean, there are others in the list, but...
Drum roll.
The vehicle of the year, the overall vehicle of the year. All the previous winners have been cars below 120,000 ringgit. We've always given it to cars for the middle class. This year is the first time we've taken it up a few notches. And the reason is simply this. This vehicle has just surprised a lot of us. And when we dissected it, if you think about it, from its country of origin, it's equivalent to the Proton or Perdua here.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to Europe, this is the Proton and Perdua of Europe. Because why? It's not an expensive vehicle, but our local taxes and AP and everything else pushes the price up. And it's a car which a lot of people are aspiring to own, especially women and young adults. So we gave it to the Volvo XC40.
Was that controversial at all in the office?
No, because everyone agreed. Mm. Everyone agreed. But it was a little bit controversial on the judging floor, on the presentation floor on that night. Because when we gave it to Volvo, of course, Volvo was very happy. But a lot of other people looked at me like, yeah, right. what's going on here, mate? But, you know, I always say this, you cannot make everyone happy. Every year we do this. There will be people who are upset with us. There will be people who say, but you know, my car was better. Like, you know, immediately after that, the people who did not do so well will come up and say, okay, I know you gave it to X, but why is my car not even considered? I say, of course we consider it, but we don't mention who did not win, you know? Like in certain categories, we had 9 vehicles to consider.
Yeah.
And sometimes all 9 are equally good because it is so hard to find a bad car today. Especially when you go above $200,000. When you go like for luxury SUV, we gave it to the Porsche Cayenne. This was a vehicle was fighting with 6 other vehicles. And all are good. They're all between $800,000 to $1 million. They're all good. And you can't find what's bad about anything. It's just that, do I like the design? Do I like this design? you know, the way it drives, they're all about the same. Power delivery, all about the same. But end of the day, one has to stand out. And that was it.
There you go. Vehicle of the year then, according to DSF.my, is the Volvo XC40. That's all the time we have for today, folks. We've got to wrap up. On that note, if you missed any part of the show, we spoke about a new public transport fund, e-racing GP, Tesla's warning for the future. We looked at tinted windows. Of course, we had local and global car launches, finishing off with the vehicle of the year. If you missed any part of this podcast, you can download it from the website. You can get it from our app. We're on Spotify. We have an Instagram page, which is
at BFM Cruise Control.
We'll be back same time, same place next week here on BFM 89.9 for Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Arif Roos
and
Daniel Fernandez. Thank you for remembering me.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.